Fresh Perspective features young professionals in the scrap and recycling industry, offering insights from the next generation of industry leaders. Guests share their stories of what led them to the scrap industry and new ideas on industry trends. Tune in to hear stories from scrap processors, traders, operators, and others who are starting to lead in this space. Fresh Perspective is beginning an ongoing dialogue with the future executives of the industry.
Hi, my name is Megan Smalley, and I'm with Recycling Today magazine. Welcome to the Fresh Perspective podcast. Today we have a somewhat unique episode of the podcast. Typically we just have one guest, but today we have three young professionals who work for Regency Technologies, which is an electronics recycler and ITAD provider headquartered in Stowe, Ohio. The episode features Stephen Saloom, who is Chief Operating Officer at Regency, as well as Mitchell Joseph, who is involved with various departments at Regency working on process improvements and strategic initiatives, and Eric Levine, who is an e-commerce specialist at Regency. I had the opportunity to talk with Stephen, Mitchell, and Eric at Regency's offices, so we recorded the episode using a microphone Eric found at Regency that was going to be refurbished, which is really cool. So Stephen, Mitchell, and Eric share more about their experiences joining the recycling industry within the last decade in this episode of Fresh Perspective.
Thanks for getting together today, everyone. I appreciate it. Now, could you tell me a little bit about yourself? How did you come into the recycling industry and what got you here at Regency specifically? So I don't know, Stephen, do you want to go first?
Sure. I think you might hear a similar story from the three of us, but I kind of grew up in the industry, more so on the scrap side. My father, Sam Saloom, started with Reserve in 1983, and he actually worked for Mitch's grandfather, and he started out in the business and worked his way through, and I was in college. I was originally pre-med, kind of didn't know what I was going to do, and started to work summers here, and it kind of just worked out with the company full-time 10 years, and still going strong.
Got it. So you never used that pre-med experience?
No, not at all.
Got it. And then, Mitch, what about you? What kind of led you to Regency and the recycling industry?
So as Stephen touched on, I am third generation of my family in this industry and at Reserve, the parent company of Regency. So it's in my blood, you know, pretty thick. Started working summers at an age I'm not going to say because I don't know what the statute of limitations on possible OSHA violations is, but my brother and I were tossed out in the warehouse and told to take apart computers. That was even before the Regency and Reserve merger, and continued working summers all the way through college, and once I graduated, ended up back at Reserve, and the need at the time was at Regency. Jim, Eric's father, has a tendency to kind of swallow up a lot of people just as Regency grows. So I was first pulled in to a full-time position with Regency as we won a large government contract, which we still have. So worked on that to start and then have held a number of different roles both at Regency and at other Reserve Management Group companies over the last 7 or 8 years at this point.
And I grew up around the industry, so my father, Jim, started doing e-scrap in the 90s when I was just a little kid. I was born in 94, so for context, I was in the single digits when he was starting to get into it. And just being around it as a youngster growing up, I was very interested in computers and technology. I was always into things like video games and computer programs, and started working summers as a kid going in to, you know, tinker with computers and get to play around and learn about it. And been in it from a young age, learning to separate boards from plastics and do all that stuff. And fast forward into my teenage years, I was doing the summers and some part-time work, and I got out of it for a little bit when I moved away to college. Moved back here a few years ago, and I've been full-time back with the company for the past 3 years.
That did remind me of one thing. As I said, my family's been more on the scrap side, same as Stevens, and whereas Eric's father, Jim, was more on the resale side. And I remember the one summer you and I worked together. That was my first exposure, I'd say, to the repair, resale, e-commerce side. We were doing some eBay posting back on Carter Street, I remember.
Now, so all of you more or less grew up in and around the recycling industry. Was this something you thought yeah, this will be a full-time job someday or not really. And I'm sure it might differ for all three of you. So I don't know who wants to go first on that. Steve?
Never really until it happened. It's kind of something that it was cool to walk into, see everything, and also, you know, work. I didn't want to mention the age like Mitch, but something that we started out early. But then I think it was the summers that I worked full-time, and the way that it was set up is we worked fully on the floor. So we had vests, glasses, and we were working in the sorting areas, in the teardown areas, in the tech areas. It was just a full immersive experience, and from there it was like, okay, this is something that I could do.
I always liked technology as a kid, and being into games and computer equipment and all that. When I was able to start working summers full-time, I jumped on it. It was kind of the age, you know, when you're in high school and all your friends start getting jobs at places like ice cream shops, car washes, and you know, I went into the recycling facility and started learning more about what we were doing there, about the processes, you know, everything from fixing units and making computers functional and upgrading stuff down to the teardown and recycle side and learning about commodities like plastics, boards, metals, ferrous, non-ferrous, and all that good stuff.
Definitely more fun than an ice cream shop, I'm sure.
A little bit. It's different.
Well,
cleaner.
The work on the floor, which, again, I think is where all of us started, is certainly hard work. There is a certain satisfaction of a job well done at the end of the day. But, you know, as a younger, maybe teenager, it's like, I'm not sure I want to do exactly this for the rest of my life. It gives you a good base of knowing the business, but also an appreciation for I want to work hard and understand the other parts of the business as well. So for me, I think I knew I didn't necessarily want to be stuck on the floor, so I better work hard and learn. But I think I did always view it, whether consciously or subconsciously, as something that I wanted to work in. It was just what I knew growing up. It had obviously been very good to multiple generations of my family at that point. And while I did pursue some other things initially out of college that kind of fell through, I knew it was there as an option, and luckily it's been a good one thus far.
Yeah, and I think there's definitely a level of humility in doing that hard work, working on the floor, working around everybody, learning the systems. So I guess for you guys, what are some lessons that you learned from your time doing that growing up?
It's funny that you say humility, because in the beginning, my mom was absolutely livid about me working on the floor. Mm-hmm. To her, I had a college degree, and then at one point I was working on my MBA, and I was actually working on the floor. She wasn't a big fan of that, but the decisions that I make today, and I'm still in operations, so I'm still involved heavily on the floor. The decisions that I make today, I couldn't make if I didn't do them myself. From every single position to operating the equipment, those decisions that I make, and I believe a lot of the people on the floor have seen me do those things as well. So there's a level of understanding there that I don't think would be there if I didn't do that.
Eric, Mitch, what about you guys?
I would certainly agree with that. And while I'm not involved on the day-to-day operations as Steven is, or even to the extent that Eric is, just knowing what goes on out there, and again, my understanding of it is minuscule compared to theirs, especially Steven's. Having people in our organization who can be resources for that, who can translate what's going on out there into larger strategy within the office, is absolutely essential to the growth of the business and to that larger humility that we look at and like to express as a key tenet of the success of Regency and Reserve as a whole. So we've always said, hey, hands-on management style, we're workhorses, not show horses, all these phrases that are kind of trite, but I think are true in our case and essential in getting Regency and Reserve to the points they're at today.
I think one of the biggest things I've learned from my experience, not only out on the floor, learning with the technology, hands on the computers, and just a day-to-day, Monday through Friday, full-time kind of gig, is just a general patience and understanding on a day-to-day grind, and knowing that, you know, there's end destinations and goals, and there might be places you want to get to, but there's a process with every hour and every moment, and you have to really be in the present moment to enjoy the ride. And I think it's grounding and really makes me feel present when I'm out there and when I'm working on what we do.
I would add, too, there's a level of appreciation that you have for each employee because you've been there and you've seen what they do, and we're really lucky to have the people that we have.
Have you guys worked outside the industry at all? What lessons have you learned from any outside experiences that have applied to what you're doing today?
So I spent a good amount of time in the live events industry. I studied music and business in college, and part of the music side of it, I was in Boulder, Colorado, which is near Denver, which is a really big music city. So that's a thriving industry there. It was really cool to learn about what goes into putting on a show. You have everything from, you know, merchandising, vendors, you have contracts with venues, you have alcohol sales and other concessions. And it's a really interesting industry. It's a lot different than what we do. It thrives on weekends. It thrives on touring and traveling between cities versus something like this, which is a very day-to-day, you know, you're in the same place. This facility doesn't move. We're not bringing thousands of people in and selling tickets and concessions for stuff. But the fundamental business model of how to make an event successful translates into every different industry. So, you know, you get to learn about different margins, numbers, trying to keep people engaged, marketing, all of that. And there were definitely some big lessons I learned from that experience to bring back to here. And I don't think if it weren't for going out and learning some of that stuff, I wouldn't have been able to be as good of an employee to Regency as I am today.
Do you recycle any of the microphones or
Oh, yeah.
studio equipment?
We're using one right now to record this podcast. I got this out of one of our recycling boxes in the tech center.
Awesome. That's cool.
I'm going to have way less relevant other experience than Eric. You know, some, you know, summer jobs growing up in the service industry and some internships outside of the scrap industry and electronics recycling in college. But yeah, I'm, as we said earlier, pretty much a lifer in at least the recycling industry as a whole. I would say really the thing that might be relevant is the time I've spent at other non-Regency businesses and locations within the reserve management group of families. So I worked in Brooklyn, New York at a company, a large auto shredder we owned for a while. I've worked in our finance department for the whole parent company. And that's been good experience in terms of just being on the ground. When I was in Brooklyn, being on the ground, dealing with all sorts of people. You know, you're in the largest city in the country and you're dealing with your own employees and truck drivers and suppliers and customers in a pretty fast-paced environment. And then on the finance side, when I've worked in our accounting department here, it's, you know, translating what happens on the floor, which can kind of be, it's not organized chaos. I don't think Stephen would like me saying that. But it is a lot going on at once into something manageable and digestible on a spreadsheet or in an accounting system.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that does relate in the sense that it's, you know, here you're with a family company or something you grew up around, so there you went to something totally different. So I guess just a different way of managing things. And then Stephen, I don't know about you, like what kind of experience have you got outside of the company that have helped your career?
So throughout high school and early college, I worked in fast food, specifically Subway. Okay. I was there for a long time. And just day-to-day operations and how things work and how to work with people, how to work with customers. Other than that, I dived right into the pre-med and I was working, doing research at labs and research at the Cleveland Clinic. And then from there, I joined here. Been here ever since.
That brings up one funny thing is just kind of a representative illustration of how we've tried to bring people through our organization and bring them up. I know of at least one that just jumps to mind, a regional manager of ours who reports to Stephen, who had done kind of an internship in high school, and then one of our managers was out to lunch one day a couple years later, and I think he was working at Penn Station, right? And ended up hiring him back, and he's progressed all the way up, and he manages a couple facilities for us out west now. So finding those people who can deal in an environment like that with a lot of different types of customers and other employees is always going to be helpful in any industry, but especially in ours.
Yeah, I guess that connects to a question I had. The recycling industry, I think it's not glamorous. People don't always know about it. You know, you got to kind of go out to find people. So What are some tips that have kind of helped you guys to recruit and retain people here at Regency and RMG?
I think you, Stephen, you'd probably be best on the recruitment side. It's tough, though.
I don't think Mitch will like this answer, but a lot of luck. We've been very lucky to have situations just like you talked about where somebody who used to work for Regency found them, hey, would you like a job? A lot of our upper-level management, at least on my side, on the operations side, is all homegrown. People who have worked, some starting as temps and working their way up through leadership positions and now up to VPs as well. And, you know, we're very lucky. We've had long-tenured management on the operations side, and that continuity has really helped us develop the processes we have and just make us as efficient as we are.
I don't hate that answer. I'd rather we be lucky. You know, ideally we'd be both, but better lucky than good, as it's said. At least on the retention side, I would say it's, you know, a little different from me being part of the family and growing up in this, but I think a hallmark of Regency is that we do treat our people well, and that's been key. I think most people here would agree. Obviously, you're talking to three of us who have all grown up and have family.
But I would add, there's a lot of second generation on the management level and employee level too. There are a lot of children that have worked here. Their parents were in maintenance or they were somewhere else, and now they're working here.
Yeah, I remember just jotting down a list at one point in the last couple of years, and I think it runs to at least two pages now of just so-and-so is so-and-so's son or daughter or cousin. So there is a lot of that, and I don't think that would happen if, you know, what we've said here of how we treat our people wasn't true. So that's essential. In terms of attracting more people, you know, I sat in on the ISRI webinar probably close to a year ago now about some of the rebranding of, rather than the scrap industry or the recycled materials industry. And I think all of that kind of messaging stuff is essential, because I know from talking to friends outside the industry that the younger generation, you know, I'm 30, we're all around the same age, the people our age and younger do care about sustainability and recycling. They don't know what they know is, you know, municipal recycling, throwing stuff in their blue bin, and we all know the issues with that, but there are sustainable, viable, effective, and efficient recycling industries that operate every day like ours. And just being able to communicate that in a more effective way, especially to younger people who do care about it, is essential. I think the ISRI kind of rebranding webinar and material is really good, and I found just having those one-on-one conversations, people are interested in it.
I think the technology aspect is fascinating. It's one of the fastest growing areas of recycling around the globe today, especially with the production of electronics that we see getting introduced. I mean, it seems like every month there's a new gadget out. It's a new game console, a new computer chip, all sorts of different types of special equipment out there. And I love people who are fascinated by the advancements in technology. I think there's a lot of people out there that are in awe of what computers can do and where they're going. And there's a interest level on the hands-on experience and figuring out how they work, what makes them go. And I think that's a really cool entry point to this industry, because there's a lot of people out there that have that interest in computer equipment and want to get their hands on it and they want to learn. And I think this is a really cool area and a cool way to get involved.
Definitely. And I mean, that's something a lot of students are interested in, but they might not think recycling with that.
Absolutely.
And so that kind of connects to my question. You know, obviously you guys are recycling technologies, but what are the technologies you see emerging to recycle those technologies that are exciting or helping to expand the industry more?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say, like, just even starting with our basic computers, you know, take Windows computers or Mac computers. You know, we're coming back, there's a big back to office push right now. Most companies are going back to in-person working, or you have some element of that. You know, everybody needs a computer now. You're still doing Zoom calls, you're still using emails and spreadsheets and scheduling things, and there's a growing dependency on the IT infrastructure for businesses around the globe. And the larger that dependency is, the more technology we need. So it advances at such a rapid rate that every time something new comes out, there's something old that's now outdated. And where some of the big tech companies live on the forefront of the cutting edge development of new product, we live in this area on cleaning up the end of life old product. And then finding some stuff too that has a little bit of life left in it and giving that a chance to survive. So we work in a weird environment in the tech industry, but it is directly related to what all the big tech companies are doing and all the advancements we see worldwide.
Stephen, I think you could probably speak the best to this, at least on the processing side.
On the processing side, it's just a lot of different things. One, our ERP system. So we actually just finished not too long ago a 3-4 year process of completely redeveloping, and we did it in-house. So we actually hired a consultant. We went out, looked at all the available programs out there and decided that each one of them was not what we needed and it was going to take too much customization to get it to fit our operation. And we decided to start with a clean slate and just develop something that would fit with our operation versus having to fit our operation around the system. And we went live last summer, and it was a big learning experience, both on the planning side, the implementation side. We've gotten to a good point now where we're also putting in some enhancements that, you know, we came up with as you go, because you can plan for the most perfect thing ever, but then when you implement it, you actually see how it actually works and get the feedback from everybody and say, yeah, I wish we would have thought of this, I wish we would have thought of that. We're in that stage now of going back and just enhancing everything that we put out and seeing what we missed.
So more on the physical side, obviously the ERP system, that was not where I thought you were going to go with that. Hadn't even thought of it. But on the physical side, so the expertise of Regency stemming from being part of the reserve management group of companies, you know, my father and uncle, Stephen's father, their backgrounds in ferrous and non-ferrous recycling, so have a ton of knowledge and experience with separation equipment and shredding equipment. And that's something I think we do really well, is dialing things in, using different pieces of equipment in different arrangements to make a clean product on the scrap side. Obviously, the repair, testing, resale side is an essential part of Regency and of the ITAD industry as a whole, but our scrap background as a company, it is a huge benefit to make good margins and make good product on that side as well. Where I think we will go, and we're just kind of barely starting to stick our toe into this, is moving into robotics and AI, you know, machine learning to improve that system even more.
Awesome. So, you know, you all kind of touched on with the technology, like there are some challenges that you're trying to overcome by applying these things. So I guess in the electronics and reuse, as well as the scrap side of things, what are some challenges that Regency and RMG are navigating right now, and how are you working through those?
I would say new equipment streams. So at Regency, as Eric talked about before, we see everything, and if a new product hits the market, we're probably going to see it within 6, 8, 10 months. And obviously with the way the world's going and electronics are going in the world, what those are changing. So we've always gotten anything with a circuit board, a battery, or a power cable, and the number of things with the circuit board, a battery, or a power cable are proliferating and growing exponentially. So, you know, we're talking about solar panels, obviously coming up as kind of the first generation of solar panels is being retired. Where's the value in those? How can you process them effectively and efficiently? Obviously everything with small embedded batteries, which are so hard to manage and can be such a hazard if not handled properly. And then the Internet of Things, the IoT, massive growth that we've seen, and that everything is smart and Wi-Fi enabled, and just how that changes what comes through our doors. Every time we get a truck, we don't really know what's in it, and that only continues to be a bigger and bigger fact as the years go by, I think.
going to be the boring one and say people, of course, is always a challenge. Just as we've continued to grow, you know, we've had to be less hands-on and just rely on a lot more people, developing those people within our program and building, you know, the next level of managers, the next level of regional managers. It's really going out and finding that talent and finding the right talent specifically and making sure they're in the right position.
Got it. And backtracking to that challenge, you know, you mentioned Regency's just got kind of lucky with its people. How do you, you know, encounter luck like that?
I think it just happens. And I think a lot of it is testament to, you know, the people that trained myself as well. I mean, there were a lot of people that really spent the time to work with us, to show us everything. And that kind of developed a culture of people wanting to stay here. And that time, it was so valuable because it shaped who we are today as managers. And I was able to spend time with a lot of managers myself. And those managers were able to spend time. It's just the larger we've gotten, there's only so much time you can split everywhere. So it's really about developing strong training programs. We're also developing internship programs and seeing how we can make sure to leverage all the knowledge that we have and the people that we have to begin to train the next people that come in.
Awesome. And then Eric, on the e-commerce side of things, what are some challenges that you've seen?
So I think the hardest thing is knowing what to do and when to do it. So when technology comes into our doors, it comes in all different shapes, sizes, colors, you name it. You feel like a kid in a candy store sometimes when you see it come in, and the possibilities of what to do are endless. Everything, you can go as deep as you want trying to fix and repair stuff. You can replace parts. You can go as far on the creative side to put together art pieces and everything in between. And you know, where do we determine what we want to put our time and effort into? I think that's a big challenge, but it's also fuel for the direction we want to go in. And that's something we're constantly working on and refining every day and deciding, you know, which piece of equipment we're going to repair, which piece of equipment we're going to recycle. And it's always changing, but I think that's a big challenge of it. And I think as technology comes farther and farther along, it makes us look with a different lens every day at how we're preparing material for customers for end use on secondary markets. I think we could all think of recycling and in the pyramid of priorities where you have reduce, reuse, and recycle. With reducing what we make as humans being the fundamental part of being sustainable, and then even before the recycle part, we have this reuse element. And I think with old computers, video gaming equipment, whatever it may be, some of that stuff's not at the end of the line yet. And to be sustainable, we're better off giving it more life to be used for the original intent it was built for before shredding it down. And we're learning every day about that.
To kind of build off what Eric just said, obviously in the ITAD space, there's the two main sides. There's electronics recycling for end of life or end of use equipment, and then there is the test, repair, resale side. And what we found, and I don't think many would dispute this, is that most players in this industry really specialize in one or the other. We at Regency feel like we are very good at both. And while that's obviously a strength, you want to be good at a lot of different things, it does present choices every day with each piece of equipment, as Eric was talking about. It's, you know, we could recycle it or we could test and repair and resell it. So making sure we have good rules in place and the ERP system that Stephen talked about has really helped that process and made it way less manual. And as we continue to refine it, will be an even bigger asset on that sort of decision tree side. That's a challenge every day with every piece of equipment we touch. A good one to have since we are effective at sort of both branches, but definitely a challenge.
Right, and I mean, that seems like that is the more sustainable solution. Just, you know, rather than just, oh, because we specialize in this, we're just going to recycle it, or vice versa, like, we're just going to go to reuse. It's like, no, each piece of equipment that you get is probably better off in one or the other.
Yep.
So think that's neat. And just a final question I had for each of you is just, what excites you most about the company right now? What are you working on that excites you? And where do you see the business heading in the near-term future?
I'd say the hardest one is we've grown pretty quickly. It's still a family-oriented business, but you get to a point where you have to start to instill some corporate structure, and that's probably been the hardest thing that I've had to deal with recently. And it's just a constant work in progress of, you know, promoting the right individuals, making sure that we keep our culture the same, but making sure that we spread it to the new locations that we've been opening, the acquisitions that we've done, and just really work on documenting our procedures, refining them, coming up with training programs, promoting people that are strong and that are able to train others that we can continue to grow in the system. It's really just maintaining that structure that we've always built and that culture that we've built, but growing it at the same time.
So building off of that, where my role has been a lot lately is in that growth of the company. Jim, Eric's father, who I report to, he runs the Regency business, and he has a big vision about where we can go. And I think everyone sitting in this room, all three of us, as well as the rest of our kind of top managers and executives, agree with that, and we're really orienting towards that. And that growth, while a lot of it will be organic, you know, we're building out our business, what we call our business development team, that's going out and sourcing equipment and opening new accounts that will feed that growth with additional truckloads of good equipment. Some of it's also going to be inorganic, and we're always looking at, you know, what are opportunities in the marketplace, whether it's looking at another company as a potential acquisition who adds capabilities. Maybe they're a specialist in some niche of the ITAD industry that we are not that strong in and would like to be more strong in, or they have some really good accounts, or they add an interesting geography, whether domestic or international. That's something we've looked at lately. So that's what excites me, and luckily it aligns with my role at Regency lately, is, hey, where are we going? We're trying to go bigger, and there's a lot of different ways to do it, and we're looking at all of them, and exciting.
I think the industry itself is on the cusp of some really major growth, and it's an interesting time to be in this space. If you rewind even just 10 years ago, if you were to talk about ITAD and ESG goals and sustainability projects for major companies, you would be finding a lot of people that have never heard of it, don't know what you're talking about. And there's more and more awareness about it nowadays, especially with what we see around the planet and where people's headspace are moving to want to go towards sustainability. And with true buy-in from major Fortune 500 companies and all sorts of other businesses around the world, we're seeing at different trade shows and all sorts of stuff that there's such a large focus on what's happening with this kind of space that I think we're going to see a major growth in it, and then also some development in terms of niche tracks that different companies are going to be able to move through in different ways this kind of material gets processed. Because there's no shortage of computers in our day-to-day lives. I think we can all agree there's just going to be more and more as time goes on. And the challenges that get presented from that are something that humanity's never seen before. We're dealing with it now with cars and e-batteries, and what are we going to do with those? You know, we have new computer chips coming out every year. Everybody has phones in their pocket, and our dependency is growing there. We have new ones each year. So I think it's a really interesting time to be involved here, and the future is bright.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Steve, Mitch, Eric. Really appreciate having you guys here.